That was right on time. Go ahead, dude.
You got it, bro. Go.
No, I can't do it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Faith Unaltered. I'm your host, David Russell, and I'm here with the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and colleague,
Dr. Hugh Ross.
One of the best guys I know, Tyler Fowler, along with Dr. Hugh Ross, who's been a mentor to me throughout these many years in my apologetics journey and quest. So, yes, we will introduce Hugh Ross in a minute, but I first want to see...
Uh-oh. David froze up just for a second.
That was you that froze up on my end, so that was interesting.
Oh. What was you saying though, buddy?
I just said, how you doing, bud?
I'm good.
How's
man.
Your week?
Had a good week. I'm throwing this up on YouTube right now. I'm a little unorganized, but it's been good. It's been a good week. So I've actually, it's over now. The man was found guilty, but I've been watching the Daryl Brooks case, and I find that
very... That was a show.
Very interesting discussion. He ended up representing himself, which is, I would suggest to any of our viewers watching, never do that because of what happened to him. But yeah, that's just, you know, I've been getting into a little bit of philosophy with the whole discussion that we had with Chris Date and Tim Stratton. And our listeners have not watched that video. I highly suggest you check it out. But on the topic of determinism and free will, and how these concepts are actually coming into law. Now, I haven't made it through the Daryl Brooks case. I'm only on day two. But I don't know if that comes up or not. But there's an interesting talk about whether, if everything's determined, whether or not we should be held morally responsible for things. And this actually does come up in some trials and in court proceedings and things like that. And so it's just interesting all around. But all in all, buddy, my week's been good. And... That's about it, brother, man. How's your week?
Man, it's been a good week. You know, I started off working the first 2 days, and then I've been off the rest of the week, been trying to get some house projects.
Vacation?
Oh, yeah, man. I did a little bit. I realized last week I was, again, pushing myself to the limits, as you know that I do.
As always.
I realized, you know, I did four of these shows, and I think it was like three in one weekend. We did three in one weekend. And then, you know, with the one that we did just 2 days before, it felt like four in a row. Right.
Right.
So I did like three of those, racked some wine and did the homecoming thing, the pumpkin patch thing, and did schooling and worked overtime. Cause I always work overtime. You know that. And I was just like, man, nah, I gotta take a break. I gotta full stop here.
All work and no play makes David a dull boy.
Oh, so. It can burn me out. But I took this last few days off and gonna be off till after Halloween.
Nice.
To do the trick or treat thing and to be off for that. But although I have training tomorrow morning, but that's another thing. But we bottled our Pinot Grigio Vignier or Vignier Pinot Grigio, depending on how you want to, if you want to do it properly. It's a type of Pinot Grigio Vignier is it's the same varietal of grape, but it produces a little bit of a different taste. Huh? So it's very interesting we did that. But yeah, you know what I'm really excited about is that we have Dr. Hugh Ross here with us again this week. Hugh Ross is the senior scholar, founder, and former president of Reasons to Believe. He holds a degree in physics from the University of British Columbia and PhD in astronomy from University of Toronto. His books include The Creator and the Cosmos, Why the Universe is the Way It Is, Improbable Planet, and Design to the Core. Hugh Ross has spoken on hundreds of university campuses, as well as at conferences and churches around the world. If you haven't been listening to Faith Unaltered and you don't know who Hugh Ross is, now you do. But if you've been listening to Faith Unaltered, you already know who Hugh Ross is. So welcome, Dr. Ross. It's great to have you again on this topic.
Well, thank you for bringing me back.
What is this, the third time?
I think it's the third time, right?
Yes, sir. So it's always a pleasure to talk with you and especially about this subject. So in preparation for Halloween and given the fact that NASA just released a 16-member team to study this subject, I do want to get your thoughts on that, Dr. Ross. But we're talking about angels and aliens and demons and all things paranormal tonight. And so, sir, it's a pleasure to have you on to discuss this. And I can't wait to dive in, but I'll go ahead and hand it back over to David so you can kind of bring everybody up to speed on a little bit deeper what we're going to be talking about. And I noticed, David, that you had said and have been saying for a little while now that paranormal activity seems to be on an uptick. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, if you're asking me,
you're David.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reiterating. I had this question for a former guest of ours. His name was Bishop James Long.
Yep.
And he even told me, because he does exorcisms, he's a ordained exorcist for the old Roman Catholic Church.
No, right?
I think that's what it's called.
The old American Catholic Church.
Yeah. So, and he does relegated exorcisms and stuff like that. And he said he hadn't noticed a big uptake in exorcisms and exorcist activity, but he has known a huge uptake in paranormal. And when I say paranormal, we're talking anything from UFOs and stuff like that. And I wanted to bring Dr. Ross on because he wrote a book called Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men.
Ooh.
So I wanted to know what prompted Dr. Ross to write that and if he's ever experienced anything like UFO, alien, angel, or anything paranormal or extraordinary. So I will leave it up to Dr. Ross to answer that.
Well, I've been studying astronomy since I was 7. And when I was 16, I was a director of observations for Vancouver's Royal Astronomical Society.
That's amazing.
And I said, hey, let's have a booth at the Pacific National Exhibition. Well, they put us right next to the Flying Saucer Club. So that's how I got to become an expert on UFOs, not by any intent on my part, but just from the fact that people would go to their booth and come to our booth and say, you're an astronomer, what do you think? And then everywhere I went, from the University of British Columbia, University of Toronto, Caltech, every institution I've served at, they made me the guy that had to process all the UFO reports coming into that institution. And then I wound up being sent to the Soviet Union to speak on UFOs. Back in the late 1980s and early 1990s. So, and then, of course, I wrote this book, Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, mainly to deal with all the confusion on this subject. Mm-hmm. But what I can share with you is that 99% of what people reported to me as a UFO encounter, I could explain as a natural phenomenon, military activity, or a hoax. But this book is predominantly written about the 1% residual. What about the 1% that doesn't fall into that category? Mm. And in some countries of the world, it's not 1%. It's more like 4 or 5%. But I want to make it clear, the vast majority of what people report as UFOs really are not UFOs as the public thinks about them.
Interesting. That was one of my questions diving in. But I wanted to – so it sounds like you're an unbeliever. Would that be fair to say, Dr. Ross?
No. I do believe that the 1% is real,
okay.
But I don't believe it's physical. We're dealing with non-physical reality.
Okay.
Now, the 99%, that's real and physical. I mean, I can tell you, a good chunk of what people reported to me were fireballs. And I personally have seen meteors coming through the atmosphere that appear as big as 4 times the diameter of the moon. And I tell people, the ones to worry about are the ones that don't move and get bigger and bigger as you watch them. That means it's heading right for you.
Right. So,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask, have you ever personally witnessed anything like a UFO, an alien, an angel, or just anything paranormal or extraordinary?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
But I know all kinds of people who have, and I don't doubt their experiences. Mm-hmm. What I call into question is that so many then think they're having an encounter with something that's physical. I'm saying, no, your experience is real, mm-hmm. But you're dealing with something that's non-physical. And so what I do in this book is I document what I mean by the non-physical but real phenomena. Mm-hmm. So, for example, there are literally tens of thousands of reports of UFOs coming through the atmosphere, and where you got multiple observers, you can track the velocity. And when the velocity exceeds the speed of sound, you'd expect to hear a sonic boom.
Right.
But no one ever reports a sonic boom. It also, and by the way, sometimes these things are recorded at moving above 18,000 miles per hour. And when they're going that fast, you're going to have significant heat friction if it's a physical object, just like you do when the space shuttle comes through the atmosphere. You see this blaze of heat, and you hear a double sonic boom. With these UFOs, no sonic booms, no heat friction observed. And 2,000 of these documented cases, the UFO goes through the atmosphere and crashes into the Earth. Mm-hmm. You go to the crash site, you'll see a shallow depression, typically about a foot deep. So you actually see a crater, and you'll see damaged vegetation. If there's snow, the snow will be melted. But as you search for debris and artifacts, there's nothing. No debris, no artifacts. If it was an actual physical craft that made that crater, there'd be debris and artifacts. Never been reported. Now, there's stories, but nobody can document the stories.
Like Roswell.
Like Roswell, yeah. I mean, lots of blurry photographs, but nothing you can touch in your hands. Lots of rumors, but nothing confirmed. And one of the co-authors I have with this book was Dr. Mark Clark, and he's a national security scholar. And he basically points out that Roswell and Area 57, 51, none of this is credible because they're claiming that our government covered up a huge secret for over 50 years. Mm-hmm. And he said maybe 11 days, like with the Watergate to audio tapes. But that's about the limit of what our government security is capable of. And says even the Soviet Union at the peak of its power wasn't capable of keeping something secret that long of that significance. So in that case, Dr. Mark Clark dismisses all these rumors, saying if they're really true, the real evidence would have come out, and nothing has come out.
Right.
So in my opinion, we're dealing with something that's real. Something caused those craters. Something damaged the vegetation.
Yeah.
But it's not physical. We're dealing with non-physical reality. I can also share with you, I had Carl Sagan as a professor when I was at the University of Toronto. He was incredibly dismissive of UFOs, but it's because his worldview did not tolerate the possibility of physical reality. As a Christian, my worldview does.
Right. Right. So how would you describe these? You say they're non-physical. Are we talking extra dimensional, or would it be more of a, I don't know, would you describe spiritual, like angelic, as extra dimensional, or how would you describe it in your own words?
Well, I cite in Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, six other books that have been written by physicists, none of whom are Christians. Okay. I don't think any of them are even theists. And probably the one that has done the most extensive work on this is the French astrophysicist Jacques Vallée. And what he writes in his books, we're dealing with something interdimensional, a real phenomena that's not operating or constrained by the dimensions of length, width, and height. These are beings that have the capability of moving and operating in dimensions beyond the dimensions of our universe. And I would concur with Jacques Vallée that we are dealing with real beings, but they're beings that are not constrained by the space-time dimensions of our universe, nor are they constrained by the laws of physics that rule our universe.
So they break the laws of physics. So it's almost, going to scripture just real quick, it almost sounds like what you're talking about. The picture that comes to my mind is Jesus after his resurrection. He's able to walk through doors and they still be shut. This is what we're talking about.
This is what we're talking about.
Okay.
And if you go to the Bible, you see that God created two distinct species of intelligent life. We human beings, who are constrained by the physics of the universe, and angels, who are not constrained by the physics of the universe. Angels can come into our realm and can leave our realm. We humans, while we're alive here on Earth, we're constrained to the universe. We can't go into the angelic realm, but they can come into our realm. So I think we're dealing with angelic beings.
Okay, fair enough. So, David, I've kind of been hogging the mic for a minute. You wanna jump in?
No, these are the exactly what I told you the way it was going to go, didn't you? Yep. It just opens up the door. No, man, if you still have a line of questioning, I want you to exploit that. I've listened to Dr. Ross so many times. I've heard a lot of this before too. So I have some other questions that we'll get to later, but I think the line of questioning you got now is going pretty good.
David, since you've heard, maybe our listeners haven't, what are your thoughts? Do you agree with Dr. Ross on this?
I do. I do. It makes sense when, so Dr. Ross and like me, I'm an amateur astronomer. I tell everybody if I do anything type of astronomy, it's amateur, mm-hmm. I've looked at the skies. I've seen some weird things, things that I can't explain, like some things what? I can't explain.
Give me some specifics.
An example. Walking outside, it was bright in the daylight, right?
Yep.
Bright in the day. And I was really into aliens, UFOs. I've always liked Star Trek and stuff like this. And I looked up into the sky and I saw what looked, I would say, an octagon type of box with some legs. And it was moving it was rotating. And I was like, me and my friend both were like, it's a UFO. We're all freaking out and stuff like that. We go inside and we see that, just in that time, the news was reporting that a satellite was in range to be seen in the dead of day. So that kind of explained it for me there. That was cool. I seen things shoot across the sky that I was like, okay, it looked like a little lightning bolt shooting across the sky. Later, I found out that that's how a certain space station looked, the Mir space station looked when it was coming across, at that particular time. So that explained that. So then I started looking into the paranormal and stuff like that. I got really into it. And I see a connection with this stuff. I see where it can be transdimensional, like Dr. Ross says. And it makes sense. It just does. It's wild.
Sure.
It makes sense.
So maybe I can get your guys' opinions on this because I still don't know what I've seen. I've been stargazing. I love stargazing. It's one of my favorite pastimes. Dr. Ross, I know I stole this from the Wikipedia page, and I know you got into astronomy because the first initial question you had was something, and correct me if I'm wrong, are stars hot? Right?
Right.
Okay. So it wasn't to disprove prove the little green men. It was if stars are hot. And so I was, like I said, I love stargazing. I'm actually in a decent, I wouldn't say it's the greatest. I was actually bummed because we went on a cruise to Mexico and I was hoping there'd be at least one night where they shut off all the lights on the cruise ship, except for the ones they have to have on. Right. And they never did, but we have a state forest out here and it's pretty dark. And so we can see a lot. And anyway, where I'm going with this, as I'm used to seeing satellites, like real dim, they almost look like stars just kind of, shooting across the sky. And so I'm used to that kind of stuff, right? I'm used to seeing planes with I don't know the technical name for them, but the red and the green lights blinking. Maybe sometimes you even see, I've seen planes with headlights on them, which I still don't understand why they have headlights, but hey, it is what it is. I was watching, me and my wife were out stargazing one night, and this was recent, and we both saw it, and so I'm curious what you guys think. Maybe it was just a satellite reflecting the sun. I don't know. But it looked like a satellite, just normal satellite, almost like a star, but it was moving, right? A dim star. And all of a sudden, this thing got brighter, like gradually. And it became so bright. It was, besides the moon, it was one of the brightest things in the sky. And it went out. Like, it got bright. Maybe took a minute to reach its peak brightness. And then all of a sudden, it went out. And we're watching and we don't see it anymore. And then all of a sudden, a little bit further down the sky, I guess that's how you'd say it. You see it again and it starts dim or it starts getting brighter and brighter and brighter. And all of a sudden it peaks and then it goes out. And I'm just wondering, what did I see? Like, was that a satellite reflecting the sun or what? Have you guys seen anything like that? Or do you know what I'm talking about? Or
no, I do. I mean, okay. I had to process a lot of reports that had a very similar description.
Okay.
And typically it works out to be an aircraft. Because as you were mentioning, they have these very bright headlights that they turn off and on. Mm. And, aircraft can be making a maneuver where they're slowly turning towards you.
Yeah.
As they turn towards you, that light's going to get brighter and brighter, then very bright, could be as bright as the moon.
Right.
And then they could just turn it off like that. and then they turn it back on again. What they're doing is they're lining up for the runway.
Okay.
And so they get ready for that. So that's probably what you saw. But typically what I need to do to really nail it down, were there other observers that saw the same thing? Mm-hmm. Then you can actually get some idea of how high up it was, where it was going. And so I always tell people, I've only got one observer. This is my guess, but it's an estimate. I can't tell you for sure.
Right.
I need multiple observers before I know exactly what's going on.
Right. Kind of like building testimony for a court case, right? You need multiple eyewitness statements. Right on. So I guess, David, I know that you have other questioning, so I still got a few more. The one that just kind of pops off in my mind while we're talking about spacecraft is you said that the things that 1%, they're real, they're not physical. My question is, are these beings, are these entities, angels maybe even, are what people are seeing, and I don't know how to describe this other than this, but embodied entities, or are they actually seeing some sort of craft?
Yeah, we can definitively establish it's not a physical craft.
Right.
Physical craft are incapable, regardless of how much technology you have, of traversing interstellar space. I mean, for example, there's a mission, a serious mission, to send spaceships to the nearest star. Mm-hmm. But the recognition is we can't make those spaceships any bigger than 10 centimeters across. If we make them bigger than that, they're going to be damaged by the particles they encounter in interstellar space if we're trying to move at more than 10% the velocity of light. And you got to move fast if you want to get there anytime soon. Mm-hmm. As it is, you're looking at 42 years to get to the nearest star, even at 10% the velocity of light.
Oh, wow.
And the plan is to send 1,000 of these tiny spaceships, recognizing over half of them will be destroyed before they get there. But a few of them might be sufficiently undamaged. They'll give us some information about the planet orbiting that star. But it means beings like us are not going to be able to traverse interstellar space. Mm-hmm. In fact, termites can't traverse. You say, well, maybe we can make a small spaceship and put a termite inside of it. But that termite is going to be exposed to deadly radiation. So we can't send any conceivable life form across interstellar space. Mm-hmm. Unless we're talking a really big spaceship. And you say, how big? Minimum size, the diameter of the moon.
Right.
If you got it that big, you can generate some artificial gravity that won't kill you over a long period of time. And you could generate a magnetosphere to protect you from radiation. So something like the Death Star and Star Wars are bigger. Otherwise, forget it.
Not happening.
Not happening. Which is why.
So no Enterprise.
The Enterprise isn't going to work. Which is why I'm saying we're dealing with something that's not physical at all. So again, what the Bible tells us, God actually created a species of intelligent life that are not constrained by the laws of physics or the space-time dimensions.
Right there, we got a couple people actually in our chat that doesn't seem too happy that we're talking about this subject and not referencing scripture. And so I'm just curious, Dr. Ross, do you believe, since these things are angelic, obviously the Bible talks about angels, demons. I'm curious. I've heard people say that the Bible describes actually UFO phenomenon, and a book called, quote, The Spaceships of Ezekiel, authored by Joseph Bloomridge, was even published in 1974. You know where I'm going with this.
I know where you're going with it, right.
Okay. So what do you think? Does the Bible describe UFO activity or?
Well, it's referring to Ezekiel 1 and Ezekiel 10.
Right.
Where Ezekiel has his vision, mm-hmm. and he sees these strange creatures where it's wheels intersecting wheels.
Right.
Where he got eyeballs all around the wheels. And as I read that, he's describing something that's transdimensional or extra dimensional. Because you can't have operating wheels intersecting one another in three space dimensions, but you could in five.
Sure.
So, and therefore, I think he really is having an encounter. In fact, it's referred to as a cherubim. He's having an encounter with a cherubim. Cherubim are powerful angelic beings. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think he did have an encounter with angelic beings, but I don't think that's what we're dealing with in the UFO phenomena.
Okay.
Because as many physicists going all the way back to Alan Hynek and the Blue Book Project have made the point, when you're talking to people who've had encounters with the 1% residual, mm-hmm. where they have a close encounter, a counter closer than 500 feet, mm-hmm. it's 100% deleterious. It's never beneficial. It's always harmful to the human contactee. The best you're going to come away with from such an encounter is recurring terrifying nightmares. You say, what's the worst case scenario? People have been killed in these encounters. Mm-hmm. Or often they're simply injured, or the animals that they have are injured. But it's always harmful. And the messages that people claim to receive are always deceptive. So I think we're dealing with the fallen angels.
Demonic.
And in our book, Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, we say we're offering a scientifically testable explanation for UFOs. If indeed we're dealing with the fallen angels, the demons, as the Bible tells us, these demons need permission to invade our lives. Mm-hmm. And they gain that permission through our involvement in the occult.
Mm-hmm.
So I close the book off by saying, if you eliminate all of the occult in your life and the life of your close relatives, that will be the end of your close encounters with UFOs.
Yeah.
But if you open those doors and begin to practice it, don't be surprised if you don't have just one encounter, but multiple encounters. And then I offer statistics. Mm-hmm. Countries of the world where you got a higher percentage of the population involved in the occult, you also have a higher percentage having these close encounters with the 1%. And that's even true here in the United States. Of the 50 states where we see the greatest number of reports of UFO encounters is Hawaii and Alaska. Mm-hmm. But those are the two states, excuse me, where you got the highest percentage of people involved in the occult. And in certain states where you got a very low level, again, a low level. The fact that there's a direct correlation between level of occult activity and these close encounters with UFOs, and especially the harmful after effects, tells me that this sustains the explanation we're dealing with the fallen angels. We're not dealing with the righteous angels.
I am so glad you brought up the occult. I want to share my screen, and people absolutely freak whenever I show them this. And so I studied the occult before I was saved. I never dabbled in it so much, but I was more so very interested in what the occult taught. Yeah, I know, right? I was going to say that's how I became a Calvinist, but never mind. I think everybody that's ever listened to Ozzy Osbourne knows of the song Mr. Crowley, and it's about I think he was 19th century occultist named Aleister Crowley, and he's famous for, number one, having the nickname the Beast from Revelation. Very, very evil person. But he's also more infamously known for summoning a demon. And now Aleister kept a journal of all of his different practices, what he did, some of his spells even. And there was a drawing in there, and I'm going to show the drawing on the screen. And like I said, whenever we discuss this topic, or whenever I talk about this topic, just to individual people or even groups of people, I like bringing this up because I like getting people's reactions, and I ask them what they think, because what we describe today as aliens as aliens, really. Aleister Crowley was famous for saying these words. He said, "Today we call them angels and demons. Tomorrow we'll call them something else." And again, being in the occult, a high-ranking member of the occult, Aleister Crowley is said to have summoned a demon. And he actually drew a picture of said demon. And I want to share that on the screen now, because the resemblance between what Aleister Crowley drew and what we normally call alien grays is absolutely mind-boggling. And I think that y'all can see that now. But yes, this is a picture of a demon. I'm on Google. And Aleister Crowley gave this demon the name Lam, L-A-M. And I just find it absolutely fascinating what we see of people, like you were talking about, Dr. Ross, having encounters, close encounters, you know, more than 500 or less than 500 feet, excuse me, and claiming to see these entities. And even people, I've heard of people having relationships with these entities before. And they, whenever they draw them, they always draw out something similar to what Aleister Crowley drew. And I just, like I said, I find that fascinating. But guys, what's your opinion on that? Am I close here? Am I right on point? Or like, I think I'd agree with Dr. Ross. These are probably fallen angels. And I think what Aleister Crowley drew, summoning a demon there, kind of proves that in a sense. So guys, what do you think about that? Is that your phone, David?
That's not mine. That's Dr. Ross.
Ahead. Take your phone. David, what is your what's your view, man?
Tyler, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think a lot of these things are probably something evil. And yeah, I would probably, me and Dr. Ross probably have the same opinion on this, I think. Dr. Ross, do you think they're evil? What do you think they're seeing here?
I was invited to go to the Soviet Union by the Soviet government back in the late 1980s, early 1990s. And I'd be addressing audiences, and I had 30 talks I was prepared to give. 60% of the time they wanted me to speak on UFOs. They were very interested in the subject. And when I was addressing these audience, frequently half of them would tell me they had these kinds of encounters. Not the 99%, but the 1%. But I also discovered that there was a tremendous amount of occult activity going on in the Soviet Union at that time, especially amongst the educated people. I mean, I was constrained. I was told I can only talk to people with doctoral degrees in engineering and science. And I remember speaking to audiences where I estimated a quarter of them were demon-possessed. And they got demon-possessed through their involvement with the occult. They were having encounters with these UFOs, and they were terrified by what they were experiencing. Mm-hmm. So it kind of verifies, hey, what Alan Hynek said years ago, that these close encounters are not beneficial. They mean us harm, and there's a deceptive message. They're trying to persuade us. You know, give you an idea. There's four UFO religions active in the United States today. There's more overseas. Mm-hmm. And two of them are based on what's called the Arantia book, mm-hmm. which is a big, thick book that was communicated through automatic writing to someone who had a UFO encounter. And when you read that book, a third of its content is denying the deity of Jesus Christ. So it tells you that there is not just a motive to harm human beings, but a motive to deceive them and to turn them away from following Jesus Christ as Creator, Lord, and Savior.
So, Dr. Ross, I was wondering, what standard were you using to signaled you to say that these guys were demon possessed versus maybe oppressed or whatever we got going on here?
Well, I walked into the auditorium, and there was these men and women screaming obscenities, not just at me, but at the person of Jesus Christ, accusing Jesus of horrible, vile moral improprieties.
Wow. And this was just like random. As you're walking in to give this talk, these people are screaming these things.
They're yelling and screaming. They're preventing me from speaking.
What?
And they'd never met me before. And then also something I've noticed is that those that are particularly demon possessed, when they encounter me, they'll cower away and curl up into the fetal position. Hmm. And then I realize, hey, the demon is threatened just by my mere presence here. And that, yeah, that explains the response.
Well, that's why I took you as my mentor. So.
Well, Well, when I experienced that the first time, I said, next time I walk into one of these auditoria, I'm going to have another Christian with me and have that Christian stay at the back and pray for the demons to be silenced.
I volunteer.
Yeah. Second lecture, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
The demon-possessed people were completely quiet. And what I notice is the other three quarters of the people in the auditorium, they all believed in demons. Yeah. They were experiencing on a daily basis. I didn't have to persuade them that they were dealing with something demonic.
Sure.
They knew right away, just from their own personal experience, what was going on. But what shocked them is that these demon-possessed people in the audience were silenced. And that got their attention to hear the gospel.
And this is all among engineers That's and awesome. The educated.
Well, when I went there, I was told we're sending you to speak at the technical institutes. And in fact, they warned me when I got off the plane. They said, if we catch you sharing your faith with anybody who doesn't have a terminal degree in engineering and science, we'll deport you. You'll never be invited back.
Wow. I mean, that's incredible to me because, you know, I know that people, you know, and the Bible describes people being possessed by demonic activity, right? They don't have any control of what they say, what they do. I remember the sad story of the little kid who his dad brought to Jesus, that the demon would cast him into the fire and into the water, just torturous things. And the thing that just boggles me, you know, is the people that is engaged with this activity, but maybe not possessed by the demon, right? They're seeing this firsthand, you know, and I ask, you know, people that aren't Christian or that believes in Satan, but not God, which I don't understand how you can do that. I object to that. If you understand and you believe that there's an entity that's called Satan, that's not human, that's a fallen angel, why don't you trust Christ, right? Because that's where we get these things at.
Well, you know, Tyler, my experience is engaging these people.
Yeah.
They do believe in God, but they're convinced Satan's going to win.
Wow. Why? Like,
so they recognize that there's a spiritual battle going on.
Sure.
But they say, we're going to win. You know, God might have, you know, two-thirds of the angels, but we're going to get two-thirds of the humans. We're going to win.
How deceived are they? That baffles me. That
baffles me too. But it's consistent because what you get through these UFO encounters is they love to entertain people about how much they know about the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But what they share, I can tell you, is not astronomically correct.
Right.
I mean, and it changes. Their story changes with time.
Mm-hmm.
And what I notice is, like, if you go back 100 years ago, the UFOs were slow-moving dirigibles in the atmosphere. That's what they looked like.
Right.
World War II, they were the Foo Fighters moving at the speed of sound.
Yeah.
Now they're moving at the speed of our fastest spaceships. And 100 years ago, they were telling people, we're from the backside of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
When people realize that that's not credible, then they changed their story and said, we're from Venus. And when people figure out how hot it is on the surface of Venus, they said, we're from Mars. Their story today is, we're from another planetary system. So the fact that they keep changing their story, the fact that their story keeps pace with the lay-level knowledge of astronomy and with their technology convinces me they have a deceptive motive. They have a motive to deceive.
Right, right. And who's the father of lies? Satan.
Right.
You know? And wow, David, I know you got some questions.
That kind of blows my mind. I was going to tell you an experience I had when I was in Puerto Rico about 2 years ago. We had a friend. I don't know, Dr. Ross, have you heard of the Anunnaki and the lizard people and all that stuff?
The Anunnaki.
I've heard of him, but I don't know much about him. I'm sorry
well,
to say.
Well, this guy would claim that he was an Anunnaki. He was a lizard person that when the full moon came out, he would have stigmatas.
Right.
I even witnessed some when I was down there that he had. Now, granted, I had walked away, but the places on his back where these whip marks look like they came from weren't – they shouldn't have been there. They shouldn't have been able to be self-inflicted, you know, at least from where I was – what I was gathering. And what I noticed in Puerto Rico is that they're very open to discussion about this stuff. Unlike Americans, they had a respect, and even if they disagreed with me, they would be open to talk about this stuff. However, this particular gentleman, and I love him to death, and I still love him. He helps take care of my father. And
is he
stuff
the guy
like
with
that.
The eyes?
Yes.
Okay.
I showed Tyler a picture of this guy one time, because when I was there and I saw the marks on his back, because I was there for a while and it happened to be a full moon during that time, he showed me the marks and we were talking, and he told me about his life and stuff like that. And then I was strolling on the internet, and I saw it came up on my feed, the Psalms 50 in Aramaic. Right. Very beautiful rendition that a Catholic priest that knows Aramaic puts out in his choir. Right. I started playing it and I noticed this guy starting reacting different ways and, you know, cringing up, you know, he didn't even know what I was playing. I didn't even tell him or anything like that. That was just one of the things that really struck me as like, OK, this guy, there's something more here. This is not. Mm-hmm. This is not that. And I go and I alerted my mother to it because she was battling the cancer at the time. This is before she passed away. And she was like, no way. And I was like, Mom, yeah, because I was getting the feeling the whole time. And I know when you walked in that room, you know, the discernment feeling just clicks, you know, you hear these people saying it, that sensus divinitatis, I guess, comes into play where the Holy Spirit is moving you. But, yeah, that happened. And then I did some other, you know, I was like, okay, let me see if this makes sense. So I did something else and it made sense. And I'm saying this stuff is real, you know, these demonic possessions and stuff like that are real. And I ended up praying with this man and he clenched up as soon as I started playing with him, you know, he just clenched up. But yeah, it was a wild experience. And That's kind of like my point is that, you know, this stuff is real and we need to take it seriously. And I'm so glad for Dr. Ross to be able to put it out there in such an intelligent way. And he deals with a lot of the UFO stuff, but I dealt with a lot of the paranormal stuff too. And Dr. Ross, what I wanted to ask, and this is our actual second question, Tyler, you asked the fourth, I believe, or the third or the fifth, I can't remember. But with the advent of the internet, tens of thousands of people have uploaded clips of UFOs to social media platforms like TikTok and YouTube. What are your thoughts on some of these video clips? Are they faked, or do you think they're easily explainable or unexplained aerial phenomena? I'm going to take unexplained aerial phenomena for right now, and I'll tell you why in a minute.
That's the new name.
Yeah.
Our government no longer calls them UFOs. They call them UAPs.
Heresy.
Unidentified aerial phenomena. And about a year ago, our government and several other governments followed suit, began to release their classified data on UAPs. And so a lot of video footage has been released, primarily taken by the military, the U.S. military and foreign militaries. And people ask me when that stuff was released, is there anything in there that's new that would cause you to change what you wrote in your book, Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men? And I said, no, it simply confirms what we wrote. Yeah. But what got people startled is that there were things released where, say, an Air Force pilot saw the UFO, but it also showed up on his radar screen, or they were able to photograph it. So it wasn't just detection, because what I write in Lights the Sky and Little Green Men, frequently with this 1% residual, mm-hmm. you see it, but it doesn't show up in photographic film. Or there's a radar blip, but you don't see it by the human observer.
Right.
However, there are rare cases where it shows up in two, even three different forms of media, but not in all forms of media. So where you got an infrared detector, visible detector, a radio signal, you got the human eye, you got the radar, is that it'll show up on maybe two or three of the devices, but not all the devices. Mm-hmm. And for dealing with a physical object, it really should be showing up on all the detectors. So the fact that we get an inconsistency there affirms, again, we're dealing with something non-physical, especially when, say, the photograph or the radar bounce affirms that you're tracking something that's moving 5,000 miles per hour. And yet there's no sign of any heat friction. There's no sonic boom. Again, that's consistent. We're dealing with something that's not physical.
Right, right.
That's so interesting, though, because, and I was just, Tyler, I'll hand it back to you. This is a quick quip. But a lot of the ghost shows and a lot of the ghost things that I've investigated personally, a lot of times they'll be caught on infrared, but they won't be able to see them physically.
Right.
And that's so interesting that you brought that up with UFOs, too.
Yeah, same thing with UFOs. After all, in terms of what's happening in the paranormal, that's actually real rather than just being imagined. It's got the same source. We're dealing with fallen angels that are responsible for these manifestations.
Yeah. I want to play a clip real quick, Dr. Ross, and it's pretty well known clip now. And I want to get your thoughts on it because this, you know, it seems, and I think that this would be a good way to say this because of what we've been talking about and how demons are very deceptive, right? But some of these craft seem very physical, right? And I think that's, you know, maybe even part of the plan, you know, because like you were saying, how they kind of change their story year after year after decade, you know, and so on and so forth. And so I want to share my screen real quick and play this clip. And I want to get your thoughts on what this pilot seen.
In 20, an Airbus A320 is on a routine flight soaring over Medellin, Colombia. Little does the captain know, he's about to find out he's sharing the friendly skies.
The pilot does us the favor of showing his altimeter, and we can see that he's flying around 30,000 feet in altitude.
The pilot then points his camera phone out of the cockpit window, and watch this as he zooms in. A metallic-looking object, a polyhedron of some sort, whizzes by in a straight line. We slow it down and zoom in further. You can see it kind of looks like a cube.
It has these kind of little points that stick out. It does seem to be...
It's the Borg.
...color and not like a bright, shining balloon. Whatever this is, it definitely shouldn't be there.
Now, it's hard to judge this object's size without knowing how far away it is, but scientist Amy Eskridge estimates it's 10 to 15 feet in diameter.
One theory is that if we were visited by another civilization, they might send probes ahead of when they actually come.
And consider this. A similar object was spotted by an F/A-18 fighter pilot in 2018 at an altitude of 35,000 feet. It still hasn't been identified, and its structure, unlike any known airframe, lends credence to the alien probe theory.
They might want to collect data, maybe do a little surveillance, a little monitoring before they actually show up.
So that, I find that video absolutely fascinating. But what are your thoughts about what they're kind of describing about probes and this, that, and the other? It doesn't seem, given what we've been talking about tonight, and granted that I think we can all agree maybe, and please, Dr. Ross, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's humans and there's angels. I don't think there are little green men on other planets in our universe, right?
Right.
And so is this what we just showed? Is this what you're describing as the 1%, or could this be military or something other, what these pilots are seeing?
Yeah, we can't really tell because you got two pilots in one aircraft looking at an object. Sure. I mean, that lady that came in and was trying to calculate the size of it, that assumes you know the distance to the object. You really don't.
Right.
And so with just a single observing platform, we're stuck with a mystery. We don't know how big it is. We don't know how far away it is. We don't know how fast it's moving. You need at least a second or third observer before you can figure that out. But it's clear there was no heat friction. There was no sonic boom. And this is why a lot of people in the military are saying, because this is just one of many reports that are like this. Mm-hmm. And they're saying one thing that happens when you're flying at that altitude and at that velocity, little bits and pieces of paint come off of your airplane. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what they're seeing is a little fleck going by. Sure. And hey, unless you got the distance, you really can't tell whether that's what you're observing or something else. But if it's relatively nearby and tiny, that would explain everything that they were seeing.
Right.
So right. Explain the color. And notice you don't have a lot of resolution on the image. It's rather blurry.
Right. So
it's hard to tell what we're dealing with. Now, I'd be more willing to entertain that maybe we're dealing with something demonic if I knew a little more about the two pilots.
Mm-hmm.
So are they deeply involved in the occult? Mm-hmm. I mean, to tell you one story.
Yeah, please.
When I was doing astronomy, I was logging in my graduate school days about 1,500 hours on the telescope per year.
Wow.
But there were two astronomers that would take 3 or 4 hours on the telescope every year. But every time they came on the telescope, they saw a UFO. And there were three of us graduate students who were logging 4,500 hours combined.
And nothing. Yeah.
We saw nothing.
Yeah.
These two guys in 3 hours, every time they saw something. But I knew something about those two astronomers.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them were deeply involved in the occult.
Wow.
So that was my explanation for why they're seeing stuff and the rest of us weren't. We weren't involved in the occult, but they were.
Real quick, do you think they're summoning them? Or like, are these entities just revealing themselves to them because they're involved in the occult? Or is it kind of a combination of the two?
Well, if you do get involved in the occult, you're basically giving these demons permission to invade your life.
Right.
They need permission, but that's how they get permission. And it can be subtle because demons will work through families. So if you have a father that's deep into the occult and you're not, the demon can work through the father to get to you. This is why David made it a point in the Old Testament to confess the sins of his parents to the Lord.
Mm.
That breaks the link. Mm-hmm. The demon can't use that link anymore if you confess the occult and activities of your close relatives to the Lord as things that you acknowledge as sin and are forbidden.
Right.
That's how you break the link. I got a chapter in the book on how to break the links to the occult.
I gotta get
it's
that.
Basically,
book.
Saying if you do that, then the permission's gone, and they can't invade your life anymore.
Right on. Right.
So, Dr. Ross, you talked to us one time. Well, not to us, but to an audience, because I watch a lot of Dr. Ross's videos. Sorry, guys, I'm a nerd. I like Dr. Ross.
You're
I watched
a nerd, all right.
One. I am a Star Trek nerd. Like I said, the first thing that came to my mind at that clip you showed was a Borg sphere. So you said that one time you guys were seeing something that kind of like darted but hovered. And you called the military. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's when I was making observations on a radio telescope. And this fast-moving aircraft zoomed towards our telescope and then stopped and hovered over our telescope. And it was ruining our radio observations. So, and that doesn't happen with the demonic activity, rarely happens where you get a radio signal, but we were getting strong radio interference. So we assumed it was some secret military aircraft. And after all, our observatory was close to NORAD headquarters.
Ah.
So it's like, okay, this is military.
Yeah.
But when we called the military, they flatly denied that they had any aircraft with that kind of capability. But we said, look, you're ruining our observations. Please tell your pilots, at least turn off the radio stuff when they get curious about our telescope. Uh-huh. It was understandable. You got this enormous radio dish in a wilderness.
Yeah.
And so when a pilot flies over, they get curious.
Sure.
Well, years later, we found out that they really did have a jet aircraft that could hover. I mean, the British Navy has a bunch of these, Harriet jump aircraft that mm-hmm. have that capability. What we now know is that our military had it years before they made it public.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, when we threatened to call the Ottawa newspapers, that's when they said, no, don't do that.
That'll we'll get them going.
Sure, we'll make sure nobody comes by your telescope.
Right. I got just two more questions, Dr. Ross and David, if you want to start winding down, we can. But actually, I take that back. I got three because one just came into my mind. But how far advanced would you say Dr. Ross, in your opinion, that our military really is whenever it comes to aircraft and things of that nature? Are we talking decades in the, you know, they've got stuff that's, I mean, secret, obviously, but how advanced, I guess, would be the way to word it, would you say that that, in your guess, would that be?
Well, we're now talking in the Air Force of Generation 5 fighters, and it's already public that our military is working on Generation 6. It wouldn't surprise me if they're working on Generation 7. You know, as I speak at these aerospace companies, they tell me that they're planning 20, 30 years ahead.
Yeah.
And so, but for that 20-year period, they don't want it leaking out.
Sure.
So,
yeah. But I've that also means heard we're Dr. looking Ross. At
technology maybe 20, 30 years more advanced than we have now. Mm-hmm. And that can be quite imaginative, but it's still not going to violate the laws of physics.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah, that's what I was going to confirm is also from everything that I've heard from people that I know and you know, circles that I travel with, that they're 20 years advanced than what we got now. You know, right. So that makes sense because
that's
it
kind of
should,
the number I heard.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah. But the idea that they're building aircraft where it's going to be going 15 G's. Well, maybe for a drone, but not for a human.
Being
in it. No,
that's right. That's right. I'm curious too, Dr. Ross. So my second question here, what are your thoughts about NASA actually releasing? So I saw on a couple reputable websites, The Hill and things of that nature, that NASA has now, I think it was actually this Monday or last Monday, has just announced that they are given a team to a 16-member team to study the UFO or UAP phenomena. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, this goes back to the Carter administration. Mm-hmm. Because when he was running for president, Carter basically made a promise. I'm going to get NASA to get to the bottom of this whole UFO thing. And NASA at the time responded saying, give us something physical and we'll study it.
Yeah.
But if it's not physical, we're not going to study it. That's not part of our mission.
Yeah.
And so that was a campaign promise that Carter was not able to fulfill.
Yeah.
And I think what's happening with NASA now, there's so much public interest in these UAPs, mm-hmm. unidentified aerial phenomena, that just to satisfy the public interest and the politicians in Washington, they say, yeah, we'll have 16 people assigned to study this. But I suspect what they're going to come up with is, we can't find anything physical in the 1% residual, and that'll get them off the hook.
Yeah, they're good at wording it like that. It's like, you know, because it's not. Well, because we haven't found anything physical, we don't know. So my last question, Dr. Ross, for you is this. We have in the scriptures a couple places, to my knowledge, that the Bible talks about ghosts, or in the Greek, phantasma, right? And how would you define ghost? Are they A, demonic in nature, B, actual spirits of friends or family or close acquaintance members that have died, C, a combination of A and B, D, something entirely different, or E, and I promise this is the last one, all of the above?
Well, maybe E, because
fair enough.
You know, the Bible tells us that righteous angels can also visit us.
That's right. Gabriel.
In Hebrews 13, many of us have entertained angels unawares.
That's right.
You read the book of Acts, you see angelic encounters. Mm-hmm. Now, we see in the Old Testament, sometimes these angels appear in non-physical form. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they appear in physical form. We've got Abraham feeding dinner to two angels.
Right.
So, and that's something that the angels had the power to do. So they can take on the physical form of a dirigible or a flying saucer, mm-hmm. but it's temporary. Sure. So they can temporarily take on a physical form and then exit that physical form. And so what you see in the book of Acts is that when the apostles had these encounters with angels, they presume that they're dealing with humans.
Mm-hmm.
But the angel disappears like that. Humans don't do that.
Right.
So then they realize, oh, this is an angel, and the angel would do supernatural things like unlock the doors of the jail.
Yes.
So when you see the supernatural there, you're realizing you're dealing with a being that's got more power than we human beings possess.
Right.
So I don't want to give people the impression that the only angels that come into human affairs are the fallen angels. The righteous angels are there to assist God's people in ministry. And I've had experiences myself where I know for sure God sent an angel because of what supernaturally happened, but it was all done to further the gospel. So and that's the promise. God will occasionally send angels to assist us in our ministry of bringing people to faith in Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And I run into people in churches all the time and say, hey, how do I sign up for this? And I said, it's in 1 Peter 3:15.
Yeah.
Always be prepared to give good reasons for your faith and hope in Jesus Christ with gentleness and respect. And in those circumstances where there's supernatural opposition to the spreading of the gospel, God will break through with supernatural assists. And that's when you'll have the encounters with the angels. On the other hand, if there's no supernatural barriers, there's no need for God to send the angels. So, and here in America, we don't have that high of a level of occult activity or demonic activity. So it's like, you know, the book of Acts, we see most of the time the apostles just shared the gospel without supernatural assists because they weren't encountering supernatural barriers.
Right.
So don't be disappointed if you're not having encounters with angels. That might be a good thing. It means they're not necessary.
You know, I'm so glad you said it like that because I'm not even gonna lie. I've prayed recently and for many, well, for about maybe about 2 years now, selfishly, I must admit, but I have prayed that, you know, show me an angel, right? Like, I don't know. Well, I mean, I do know it's to satisfy my selfish needs. But, you know, in some ways, you know, what you're saying, Dr. Ross, I can relate to. And maybe just because you don't physically see something, that doesn't mean, because like you said, they can manifest themselves visibly, invisibly. However, well, they wouldn't be manifesting themselves invisibly, but God can send them invisibly, I'm sure. You know, so it doesn't, you know, just because one doesn't see something, right, doesn't mean they're there. I mean, I've had experiences, my wife has had experiences in our house recently, and like I said, for the past couple of years, where we just have an uneasy feeling that we're watching a movie and then all of a sudden, well, both of us will just kind of look at each other and, you know, do you kind of feel that? And yeah, but it's uneasy. And so what we'll do is we'll pray, you know, God, there's no demons allowed here, there's no fallen angels allowed here, only you, your Holy Spirit, and a good angel, if you want to send one. But, you know, I think that God, I think God works. The whole point that I'm trying to make here is that I truly believe that God works both in the visible realm and the invisible realm and protects his children by whatever means necessary.
Yeah, most frequently you don't see the angel, but the evidence is there that this couldn't have happened without the assistance of an angel.
Right.
I mean, one really quick story. I had a new Christian with me. Yeah. We were doing cold turkey, just knocking on people's doors to share the gospel with them.
Yeah.
And we came to this one place, really dark. And we opened the gate and there was a big German shepherd dog there. And the dog guided us to the front door. It was a 5-acre estate.
Wow.
So it was a good 100 yards to get to the front door of the house.
Yeah.
We got to the front door. The man opened the door and said, how did you two get here? And we said, well, your dog showed us the way. And he said, didn't you see the sign at the gate? Uh-huh. We said, no, we didn't see any sign. He says, it's brightly lit. There's no way you could have missed it. And what was on that sign was a big warning. Trained attack dog on the premises. Do not enter. And so he asked us, when you got close to the gate, did our dog bark? I said, we didn't hear a whimper out of your dog.
Yeah.
When you opened the gate, did the dog attack you and pin you to the ground? I said, that didn't happen. The dog guided us right to your front door. And then he stared at us and he said, you two wouldn't be Christians, would you? I said, why do you ask?
Yeah.
He says, because my wife and I and our three children have been praying this evening that God would send us Christians so we could discover how to become Christians.
Wow.
All five of them prayed to receive Christ that night after we answered their questions for about 30 minutes. And the
well, they probably put the dog to sleep, Dr. Ross, afterwards for not doing its job.
That was confirmation.
They knew what was going on.
No, that's, like, that's totally awesome.
Because that guy showed us the gate, and sure enough, there was a big sign there, and it was ringed by lights. And what the young man told me, I agree with him. He says, God sent an angel to blind us to the sign.
Yeah.
And he sent an angel to guide the dog so the dog wouldn't do what it was trained to do.
That's well,
you know, it's what's amazing is I'll tell you guys this. I don't think I've said this on air before, but when I first got saved, I was also praying for that angel, right? Because my grandmother raised me on things like that. She raised me on, you know, you never know and this and that. And, you know, so I was like, you know, God, if you're ready for me, then I will respond to you if you send me an angel, right? So my buddy had just got into Christianity and he was challenging me on some things and asked me to go to a Bible study with him. And I was like, okay. So I went to a Bible study with him. I remember praying. I mean, literally it was the week of that I decided to go that I said, God, if you're ready for me, then send an angel. All right. Send angels. Right. And literally when I got saved, there are two guys there that he took me to their house and we had a little Bible study and they convinced me. They really convinced me of that Christ would give me the tools that I needed to be a Christian, right? Mm-hmm. He would do what he had to do, right? And as we prayed and stuff like that and I accepted Christ, I look back at that. I look back at that, that those were the angels. You know, God sent those two. It's funny. It doesn't have to always be something that's quasi-supernatural, but just messengers. You know what I mean? So, like, in a way, he answered my prayer, but he did it in a unique way. And
well, that's
I was
the
just,
context of Hebrews 13:2. Many of us have entertained angels unawares. We weren't even aware that there was an angel there. But God sent someone to assist us in our ministry in that particular situation.
Right.
And so we would expect that most of the encounters we have, we don't even notice.
Yeah.
That are some sort of divine way, you know, that, you know, he does this. But yeah, it's truly awesome. And, you know, I loved what Tyler said. I was going to joke with him, but I'm going to defer here. But
that's a first.
Yes. You know, it's okay, man. Sometimes it happens, but you know, I love
you,
bro.
I'm impressed.
But I wanted to get a little bit more into ghosts because we're actually going to, well, we decided that we weren't going to do it, but we want to do it. We want to talk about ghost hunting.
We're going to bump it.
These people that
we're going to do that
actually, you know, investigate. There's a lot of things you said tonight, Dr. Ross, that, you know, have got me thinking about, you know, it confirms what I've always thought. These people, they use mediums, they use the occult, they use a Ouija boards, they use all these certain type of methods. And for me, it's just like, wow, you know, it doesn't
make sense.
I'm
glad you brought it up because I didn't answer that question. You know, people have these, you know, little tools they use to try to contact one of their dead relatives. The Bible explicitly tells us once we finish our life here on earth, we, the dead in Christ, go to be with the Lord and we become passive observers. We can see at least to some extent what's going on here on earth. You see that in Revelation 6:9, where it refers to the martyrs asleep under the altar. They're aware of all the evil going on the face of the earth, but they're not allowed to interfere. I mean, we get that explicit command in 1 Timothy that the only one who can interfere, the only one we should pray to is Jesus Christ. The dead in Christ can't help us. So how do you explain all these experiences people have when they say, my dead father came back and visited me, or my grandfather, or my wife? Well, what's happening is a demon is taking the form of that dead person. And you see this in scripture. I mean, you've got the woman who is summoned by Paul. And what does she do? She calls up Samuel. And, you know, I think God sent one of his righteous angels in the form of Samuel to give a warning to everybody that was there. So it wasn't Samuel. It was an angel taking the form of Samuel. And I've run into people who have had these kinds of experiences. And frequently what happens once the angel gets exposed, this is the case of a demon, the demon will ask a question. Hey, how close did I come? They actually want some feedback on how well they're doing on taking the form of someone's dead relative. So just be assured the dead in Christ are not able to do that. Now, here's an important caveat. And I got this from Gary Habermas, where he tells me that, you know, when a Christian dies and the surviving Christians have concerns, are they really with the Lord? Because, you know, they saw the sins they were getting into here on earth and they have doubts. And he says, what happens is frequently 2 or 3 days after the death of that person, the surviving Christians will have a vision. And so what's eerie is a vision always lasts about 5 or 6 seconds, but they get to see the person that has passed away, and that person reassures them, don't worry about me. I'm in heaven. I'm with the Lord. I'm in a good place. And my older son had that experience because he witnessed a friend of his getting murdered. And he himself got severely injured. He was stabbed 4 times and was recovering in the hospital. And I was with him the second day after he'd been stabbed. And he says, Dad, do you believe in visions? I said, well, tell me, what did you see? Mm-hmm. He said, I saw my friend Ryan in a beautiful forest waving to me and telling me not to worry about him, that he was in the right place.
Wow.
And 6 months later, I talked to the father of that young man. And the father told me he had the identical vision at the identical time with the same description.
Wow.
So,
see, and that just goes to show God still works through visions and miracles and all these different things.
And like, he's committed to reassure us.
Yes. Yes. I was making some faces a minute ago. It wasn't nothing to what you guys were saying, but Facebook.
What's Facebook?
Facebook put restrictions on our account, bro, because Richard said, so the faithiest atheist, Richard Settles said, I have a question. And I put, shoot, Richard, you know, like fire away. And they took it as a comment of violence or harassment.
Oh, that's the algorithm did that to you.
Yes. And so I disagreed with the decision. So that's why I was making faces. If y'all saw me, it wasn't nothing that y'all were saying.
You got to watch what you say, Tyler.
Apparently. I'm sorry, doing this happened. Long enough.
Do what, Dr. Ross?
I'm really sorry that happened, because he makes some really good posts on my Facebook page.
Richard's awesome. I think it's an honor to have him. We've had him on the show a couple of times. We've got another show planned with him. And who's the other one? The Bible Geek?
Geek. We're gonna work that out. Yep.
No. Okay. Fair enough. And now that you, I'm gonna go ahead and spoil it, David. But you mentioned Gary Habermas. He's actually coming on the show. We're going to be. We're still working it out. Everything's getting. Plan for that, but a buddy of ours, Real Seekers, Del Glover, we're going to collab and hopefully be able to make that conversation happen. Yep.
Put it on like two different channels. Well, it's about his magnum opus
for being an expert on the resurrection.
Yes,
he's also an expert on near death experiences.
Yes.
Oh, I want to talk to him about that. Okay.
I will get in touch with him. He's literally about 2 hours from where I live. Send him an email if you want. He's in Lynchburg. So
do it.
Right.
Yeah. So if you want to talk about near-death experiences, send me some questions and stuff that you want answered. I've talked to Gary about a lot of that stuff, and I've read a lot of Gary about that stuff, just like Dr. Ross. But yeah, so yeah, it's pretty. And I was going to say, Tyler, is are you convinced of the old Earth now?
No. Sorry. Maybe someday.
But
maybe
okay.
Someday. If an angel would come to me and tell me that the earth is old, okay?
Well, how about if I tell you that the earth is old?
There it is. He's your messenger.
Oh man, that's funny.
How about if I take you to a radiometric dating lab?
I will go. Like anywhere you want to take me, Dr. Oz, I will humbly go with you, sir.
So. The real evidence is in the Bible. It Fair tells enough. Us the laws of physics don't change.
Right.
And every young Earth model critically depends on radically altered laws of physics at the fall of Adam and the flood of Noah.
Right.
So I just tell people it's not just astrophysics that rules it out. The Bible rules it out.
Right on. I got to dig more into it. And so, David, I see you kind of, are you froze?
I think he's David, frozen.
I think David just froze up, but he's going to blame me this time. But oh man, but it has been an absolute blast, Dr. Oz. Let me get him off of here real quick, and then maybe he can come back. Hopefully,
it's always really fun with you two guys. I love your sense of humor.
We try, and I think David and I, you know, we try. We've got such different personalities, and we disagree on, you know, so many different things. But at the end of the day, and he says it all the time, our Friday nights, like, this is what I look forward to, is, you know, to be able to fellowship with him, to be able to sharpen each other's iron on this subject, or on every subject that we do talk about. And it's just an honor and a pleasure to have you with us, Dr. Oz. We love you. And, you know, from the moment that I actually met you, you're becoming one of my favorite theologians and astronomers. And so I definitely respect everything that you do and everything that you say. And I just thank you for dedicating your time to come on three times now on Faith Unaltered. And I'm glad we can have some fun and have some laughs as well. So.
Oh, that's great. It really makes a difference when you got a good talk show host.
That's right. Well, thank you for
you
that.
You guys are good.
We appreciate it, sir.
I did have one more question.
Yeah.
And I was going to hit this one last because I wanted Dr. Oz to tell us what he thinks about the number of technologies these paranormal investigators use. Now, this is not, you know, with the Ouija boards and stuff like these are actual technologies such as like a spirit box that scans radio waves to get these entities to come through, like EMF detectors that detect electromagnetic fields and sound recordings. Now, like in the paranormal, the sound recordings have been used forever, right? And I'm sure you've heard a lot about those too, Dr. Oz. But
yeah,
what are these things like the EMF detectors and spirit boxes and stuff like that? What are your thoughts on that? Do you think they can actually capture it, even if like the person doesn't have like occult activity? And I have one more caveat to add after that.
Well, it's the intent that's crucial about the occult. I mean, if your intent is to try to gain power over truth, the demons are more than happy to accommodate whatever means you want to communicate. I mean, I had a grandmother that would talk to the demons over a telephone. So he can do it through a smartphone. He can do it through electromagnetic radiation. He can do it through NASA. I mean, they're more than happy to accommodate whatever means of communication. But they do need permission. They need to at least have a human that's wanting to contact them and gain something from them. And that's the strategy of the demons, is to give you power in return for the loss of truth. And so I tell people that are getting involved in the occult, what's a higher priority for you, truth or power? And they say power, I can't help them.
Right. What about these? So what about these
right.
people that they have these paranormal experiences at their house, right? And they're literally out of the blue. They're plagued by it, right? And they're like, well, you know, I just want somebody to investigate what this is. Do you think these investigators is there something more to what they're doing
Well, I've been involved in that myself. I mean, there are people in our church, for example, who say, hey, we just bought this home and there's one room in the house is 10 degrees colder than the other rooms. And it's a place where spoons are floating in midair. And it's like, well, that's a good sign that demons are active.
Heater ain't going to fix that one.
So, I went over to the house and they said, well, we've already scanned the house. We can't find anything left by the previous owners. I said, well, I appreciate your diligence there, but let's spend some time praying. Mm-hmm. So we prayed for about a half hour And then suddenly something motivated me to say, have you checked the garage? They said, yes, we checked the garage. Well, show me the garage. So we go out in the garage, and it was a pile of junk lumber on the rafters. As they said, have you checked that out? No, we haven't. It's just junk lumber. I said, tell you what, let's pull all that junk lumber down and see if there's something there that we've overlooked. So we haul all the lumber down, and there was an astrological forecaster in the middle of that junk lumber. We went back into the room that was 10 degrees colder. Mm-hmm. You could see a faint octagonal outline on one of the walls, and it perfectly matched this astrological forecaster. So once we destroyed that item, the temperature of the room went back to normal and no more floating spoons in the room.
Wow.
So one last thing, and this is the caveat that I wanted to add. I've always been under the assumption that, you know, there's a lot about this world we don't know, right? Mm-hmm. I often tell people, you know, sometimes, and I showed the guys last week a picture in Gettysburg where a guy was just thought he was seeing some Civil War reenactors, right?
Oh, yeah,
and then
the video.
Panned back, mm-hmm. and they're gone, right? And there's no way they could have ran into the woods or anything like that. But I was thinking, you know, maybe some things like these residual haunts where, like, people may see footprints or hear footprints or hear disembodied voices or something like that is maybe something that we just haven't been able to explain yet as far as the laws of physics and this and that. Is kind of like, I kind of explain it like, okay, when someone flashes a camera at you, right, and the brightness of the flash stays in your eyes for that amount of time, could there be something with the energy that goes on at these, like, battlefields where a lot of death and a lot of energy is expended that kind of imprints itself on the world, and we're able to kind of like see that every once in a while in a certain time, in a certain pattern or something like that?
Well, one question I ask people who tell me that they've seen this UFO thing in the sky, I say, well, how much time went by between you leaving a well-lit home and going outside in your backyard and observing this phenomena? If it's less than 20 minutes, I discount their experience, because it takes 20 minutes minimum for your eyes to fully dark adapt. And while they're dark adapting, you'll frequently see bright lights in the sky. That's why you put one of the titles, Lights in the Sky. Hey, if you're not fully dark adapted and you've been in a well-lit environment, you're going to see lights in the sky. That's just part of the way our eyes operate.
Wow.
It takes time for them to adjust. But hey, if it's 2 hours later, then I'm going to be drawing a very different conclusion about their experience.
Wow. If I ever get any UFO phenomena on camera, I'm going to send it to you, Dr. Ross, to get you to critique it. So
sounds good.
That'd be awesome.
So if it's let me just make this clear. I just want to get this clear. As these residual haunts, do you think there could be something there that maybe we just haven't discovered yet as far as energy and how it could imprint on the Earth or what?
No, I'm very skeptical that this is some kind of unknown physics, just because of how much we know about physics. People speculate, well, maybe there's a fifth law of a fifth force of physics we haven't discovered. That's possible, but we've done the measurements. If there is a fifth force of physics, the impact it's having on our natural environment is way down to one part in a quadrillion. So it's not going to manifest itself in any kind of spectacular way. But I am willing to conclude maybe we're dealing with something that's angelic or demonic.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be possession. You know, people, I hear stories all the time. Hey, I was asleep and I heard footsteps in the room.
Yeah.
Well, that's not demon possession, but it could be demon oppression, mm-hmm. where the demons kind of came there and then made themselves manifest.
Yeah.
But typically when that happens, that means that individual has some open doors to the occult. So I'll question about whether or not they've been involved in a number of activities. Or it could be that the previous owner of the house was involved in the occult. Or maybe there's a relative. That's why I've got a checklist in this book.
Yeah.
Go down the checklist and make sure everything's taken care of. because if there's no close relative, no previous owner, no artifacts left behind in the place, and there's nothing in your life that could anyway be an invitation, then these kinds of phenomena should not be happening. With one important caveat, if you as a Christian are ministering to someone who is involved in the occult and being oppressed by demons or possessed by demons, sometimes the demon will attack you to try to scare you off. It's like, hey, you're encroaching on my territory.
Right.
You know, and so they'll try to frighten you. And what I tell Christians who have that experience, given that your life is clean of the occult, if that happens to you, and it's because of your ministry with someone who is deep into the occult or oppressed or possessed, you need to praise God when that happens. That means you're having an impact on that person's life. If you were having no impact, the demon wouldn't be threatened. Yeah. The very fact that the demon is threatened, you need to be praising the Lord. Victory is happening here. This is a time to press forward, not a time to back off. On the other hand, I always tell people in that situation, get help. Get several other Christians to go with you. Pray and fast, because you may be dealing with a much more powerful demon than you think.
Amen. You have given me a clear conscience tonight, Dr. Ross. I'm not involved in the occult. I don't have any family members that I know of involved in
the
occult.
Well, you're a heretic, so that's bad enough. So
look, shut your mouth. But guys, it's been a blast. I actually have to run. My babysitter is getting ready to drop off my little girl. I think she just pulled in the driveway. And so, David, do you want to wind down real quick? And
I will wind us down and let you close it out. So, Dr. Ross, again, thank you so much for having us. And of course, these questions will always, always be around. I think we even had probably could have gotten into more like battlefield sounds and stuff like that. But, you know, our time's limited. And, you know, we love the fact that we're able to get such great scholars on like you, Dr. Ross, and just share experiences. We love hearing your stories as well, just about the dog and stuff like that. That was amazing. Yeah, that you was know, awesome. I mean, that's just really cool. But, you know, just everything in general, we thank you again. We can't thank you enough. Guys, on Faith Unaltered, we're going to have we're bumping back the ghost hunting one. I don't know when Tyler is going to actually want to do it because we've got shows planned out through November. But we will get to it. We promise. And not only that, but we got Travis and Than coming on for exploring the foundations of reality, which is going to be fun. And Tyler, we got a lot in November already.
Well, tomorrow we've actually got Tyler Vella and Colton Carlson coming on to discuss their review of the Tim Stratton and Chris Date show we did. So catch that tomorrow at 7 p.m. And like David said, we've got a whole host of shows planned in November. Again, Dr. Ross, it's been an absolute pleasure and an honor. Thank you, sir, for coming back on with us. Reasons.org is his website. And I will put a link to the book Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men in the description. But until next time, good night, God bless, and stay like Christ.